In this episode of the Learn Live Music Podcast, I sit down with tour visual designer Grant Fletcher, a motion graphics artist, video editor and creative director from Australia. Grant's work has graced arena tours and been shown in some of the world's leading stadiums. In this conversation, we hear how he got started, continues to attract clients and how he's been able to diversify his income as a freelancer. We're talking to crew, artists, musicians, creatives, so let us know who you'd like to have on the podcast. Email at learnlivemusic.com or comment on YouTube. Enjoy the show.
Thanks for having me, man. I really appreciate it.
So I'd love to hear what a typical project looks like for you. So we focus on live music on this podcast. I know you're a creative director, motion graphics artist, designer, video editor. You do lots of different things, but you've really carved out this niche and become known for doing tour visuals. So tell us a little about one of those projects. You know, when do you get involved? Who is it that gets you involved? And what does your role look like?
I'll tell you what, I get involved really late, which is always the thing that bugs the guys in tour visuals. We're kind of the last thing thought of in a lot of cases, but invariably there's a tour that's been booked. There's been, you know, creative direction laid out. Hopefully the MD has most of the show locked, most of the set list. I do come in sometimes when the set list isn't locked, and that can be frustrating, but usually all that's locked in. You know, I'll get an email, someone will say, you know, they're looking for visuals for a certain amount of songs or a whole show or just one or two items of a whole show. So say they go, look, we've got, you know, we're pretty chill for most of it, but we really want to do something special for the single or the opener. And then I'll get an email through, or sometimes it's an Instagram DM. And then from there, it's trying to figure out, usually across time zones, because I'm in Western Australia and most of my clients, about 95% of them, are in Australia, a few in the UK, in the US and a few in the UK. And so then it's trying to figure out what they're after, you know, what stuff that I've done before that they like. And then usually the first thing that I want to get is the specs. So any technical specs that I need. So usually I'm looking for a map or a raster. So when, you know, bands go on tour, you know, there's no end to the ways that they can put together the screens now, because the LEDs are just big squares. So they can put them together in any configuration. So usually the production designer or the lighting director has built a map or a raster, which is just, you know, how these screens are configured, and then they give you kind of like a map that fits within usually a 16:9 like space. So, you know, sometimes it's different, because that's the thing, the screen sizes are always weird and different, but it's a lot easier if they can give you like a 16:9 map of the whole screen. So here's a narrow bit, and then there's some little screens up the top. So if I can get that raster, I can figure out what kind of style they're after, that kind of thing, have a long back and forth about the creative. And then usually I just need the tracks and I'll jump right in, so that I can get to, you know, first approvals, second approvals, and so on. It really, if I've worked with them before, it's a lot smoother process. If it's a first time, we spend a lot of time in the creative beforehand. If you can nail down, you know, what the client wants in terms of the look they're going for, the feel they're going for, how much you're going to be working with the lighting director, you're away.
Yeah, amazing. There's so much in there. I want to unpick a little bit of that. So you talked about, I think with many creatives, the frustration in being brought in a little bit late in the process. So like any creative directors, production designers, etc., listening. So what do you think would work differently, like if you were brought into the process as a visual designer earlier, how could that work more collaboratively?
It depends, because sometimes it's just sometimes the issue is that they're asking for the moon, but you know, you only have, you know, 3 days. So that's one problem. If they've got big ideas and you go, big ideas are great if you came to me 2 weeks ago. But the other side of it is, like you said, the collaborative side. I find with tour visuals, I think that a lot of people in the industry don't actually fully understand what it is that we do. And they still, some people who aren't maybe as versed in it, think of tour visuals as a video element, whereas I think of it as more of an extension of the lighting rig. And so if you're not brought on early enough, you do end up just making videos and chucking them on a screen. Whereas tour visuals, like if you're watching the video, say like people, you know, expect me to post a bunch of tour visuals on Instagram. When you post them as they were made, they're extremely boring, because if you're stealing attention from, say the, you know, the vocalist or the group or whatever it is, then unless it's for a moment where you've had a conversation and they've said, we want to really, you know, move into the background, we want the screen to take over for a minute. If you're taking focus away from them, you're not doing your job. And also, if it doesn't fit in with the lighting and it doesn't fit in with what the MD is doing dynamically, you've done a disservice to the whole show. So usually coming on earlier would mean that you have more of an ability to add ideas when it comes to all the other parts of the direction, in terms of, you know, and I've done some great shows where I've come on late and then it's the LD and the MD have just made a really great show and you can slot into it because everyone knows what they want. And other times you're like, oh, it would have been great if we could have done this, but now we don't really have the time. There's also the inverse, which I don't know if it's the same in the live music world, but sometimes I find that if you give a client too much time, they make changes because they have time to make changes rather than they need to make changes. So I find that sometimes there's a balance between being brought on too late and being brought on too early. If you get on too early, you might just find, you know, they're like, oh, let's try this. It's like, yeah, okay, it's fine, but you're going to keep doing that until... Because tour land, everything's crunch time all the time. Everyone's always late. It's always last minute. And it's always been like that. I've worked in tour visuals for over 10 years, probably more like 15 years. And I'm used to it always being last minute. And I'm less frustrated with it now than I used to be, because I just know it's coming. But there is that blessing of when it's more last minute, you get second guessed a little bit less.
I think it's a really interesting point that there's been a whole integration now of stage design and sets with lighting, with video, because of LED and all the different products, and even with the audio as well, because so many people, like any pop show now, you know, is reliant on tracks and everything being in sync. The days of bands without a click track and throw up, you know, a sheet and project something, a weird film onto it in the background, you know, when I started going
I stopped going on tour. Like, I haven't been on tour for ages. And I mean, because it used to be that when you did the visuals, you kind of VJ'd it as well. Like, I used to actually be in the room and direct it. But now, you know, you might go on the first night, but then you know, for creative direction. But for the most part, because everything's to track, everything's to click, everything's to, you know, Simpty, I can make it here in Western Australia. You know, I live over the road from the beach and the wine region or whatever. And then we just chuck it on Dropbox and ship it off to America and they take it on tour all over the world. So I think that the click and the track side of it means that I don't even have to be there, as long as I understand what it's going to be like in the room, like the more information you get on that, because tour visuals is all about the actual room and the environment. You can't really make anything unless you know, okay, how big's the room, you know, what can they see from the back, like can we do detail, is it projection, is it LED, like you were saying, because you treat those totally differently. Is it a scrim, is it a kabuki, like what, you know, you have to know what the room's going to be like. And then obviously we do weird surfaces as well, but for the most part I can just do it from here because everything's to track. As long as you give me the track, you'll be able to sync it up on the day.
Who is it that tends to get you involved in a project to begin with? And does that tend to be where your, you know, where your clients come from? Like, what sort of sources do you have for clients and client acquisition?
I think a lot of the guys who call me up first up would be lighting directors for the most part. Some production designers will contact me. And then sometimes it's the artist directly. You know, so I've got some, which is weird to me because obviously they're, you know, like I've had Grammy award-winning artists tell other Grammy award-winning artists about me. And I'm like, I'm just the guy sitting in my, you know, bedroom making visuals for 15 years. But it does happen. But for the most part, it's someone on the production team. Like I said before, if you can get along with your lighting designer and you have a rapport with the lighting community, you can do a lot and you can do really well for yourself. So usually it's that. There's a few jobs here and there where they'll have a creative director that is separate. So for some of the bigger shows that I do, like I've done a conference called Passion for the last few years, which was in the Mercedes-Benz Stadium the last 2 years, where I guess now infamously for Kanye West's listening parties. But anyway, and like big stadium shows like that, usually there'll be a creative director as well. And so sometimes they're the one that brings you on. But yeah, usually my Instagram following seems to be After Effects geeks and production designers and lighting designers. So that's where I get a lot of referrals from, actually, from Instagram.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, what advice would you give to, you know, maybe people trying to get into the game? They may be doing motion graphics, but they've got that passion for live music and the production design side, and they don't have the relationships you've built up over 15 years. So what are some ways they could move forward?
I mean, the way that I personally did it was that I got a lot of experience volunteering for my church. And so for anyone out there that is in church, they would know that the majority of churches now in all over the world of a certain, you know, charismatic Pentecostal, whatever, but people are pretty used to there being screens in church because we always had them to display lyrics so that everyone could sing along. So volunteering in church is a great way. But otherwise, you know, that's literally how I started. Like I was volunteering in church. Then I started getting paid gigs for my church. And then one day I was in church and someone introduced me to our mutual friend, Joe Clegg. So that's pretty much, I was doing gigs for one company, and then I suddenly was doing gigs for Ellie Goulding. So in the case of me, someone who was in the industry saw the work that I was already doing in the industry because I had been doing work for free. So if you know any artists that ever go anywhere where there's a screen, a lot of the clubs now, especially the festivals as well, they'll have screens. And then if you can do something for free or for cheap, then you have a portfolio, you can get your foot in the door, start putting it on Instagram, you know, put it on Vimeo, YouTube, wherever you can put it. I always tell my guys that you have to have a showreel or, you know, you're not going to get hired. I don't think you have to be Instagram famous to do well. I know some guys who are, you know, do really well and no one follows them on Instagram, but it's because in the industry, people talk about them and know who they are. But you still have to have, in video, you have to have something for someone to see. So definitely try and get your work out there any way you can, free, low paid, whatever it might be, so you can climb. And then make sure that you constantly update, you know, your online profiles to have a showreel, you know, every 6 months, 18 months, but also any snippets of work that you do. And I do that to this day, even though I have, you know, a lot of clients that will refer me work, that, you know, or that I'll have repeat clients. Like I have clients that I've worked for 15 years, but if you want to, you know, grow and do new things and better things or just different things, you got to keep constantly kind of advertising yourself.
Yeah, very cool. Well, one thing I know you've done recently is you've been able to diversify your income as a freelancer with some different collaborations and products. It'd be good to hear a little bit about those. Like a lot of people, you know, listening to this podcast are people in the music industry. A lot of them are self-employed people, you know, who very much, you know, work when they're on the clock, as it were, you know, working by the hour. And you've been able to decouple your income a little bit from just the freelancing and service base with some other projects. So could you tell us about maybe how that started and what some of those projects look like?
Yeah, so I mean, for me, I was like working in tool visuals mainly and doing other stuff like, you know, title design and any motion design work I would get my hands on, really, but mostly tour visuals. And I've done, you know, lyric videos and behind the scenes, you know, docos for artists and stuff as well. But then when the before the pandemic really kicked off and we're all in lockdown, a few years prior, I'd started making visuals specifically for churches and putting it on a website and just selling it there. Because what I was getting was I would work for these really well-known acts, and most of my work's been in the church world or the Christian music industry. But, you know, they're obviously like, I mean, if you're not aware, these bands pack out stadiums and, you know, sell, you know, billboard topping artists, but you won't hear them on the radio and you won't really see it in the news, except if there's a scandal, of course. But so I was, people would ask me, oh, we do that song on a Sunday in church. Can we use those visuals? And I'd say, no, it's, copyright. It's owned by the artist, not owned by me. And after getting enough of those requests, I just thought, hey, maybe I should just make some for the same songs and then make them available to the wider community. And so I've done that for about 5 years, and that did really well. And then when the pandemic hit and all the touring stopped, a guy that I'd kind of known off the internet, and we'd kind of followed each other's work in tour visuals, he was doing some stuff in the video world, resourcing other video creators, a guy named Ezra Cohen. And so we started collaborating on a few things. I was mostly doing marketing at first. But then I had the opportunity to take some of the assets that I had already made and put on hard drives over, 10 years, and actually bring them in and kind of rejig them so that they would be, applicable to more artists and creators. So it really started off by being something where you go, what gold do I have in my hard drives that other people could benefit from? Could I repackage it in a way that it's easy for other people to use and then make it available online for a nominal fee, so that I could also bring some extra coin in from stuff that I've already made? And from that, I saw, varying degrees of success depending on the product, and I've had a lot of different partnerships since then. Learned a lot about kind of that side of the industry of, everything from marketing to just what products are really gonna go off, what do people actually want. But it really starts with, do I have anything that is not available anywhere else that I could make available for someone like me to use? And it doesn't have to be a thing where this is going to be the thing that hits and my main source of income. It can just be one of your five side hustles that brings in a little bit of coin every month. And that can be really beneficial for the times where I didn't have any gigs on. To just have at least a little bit of money trickling through, really gave me a little bit of confidence.
Yeah, that's cool. Sadly, we all still remember the time when there wasn't any gigs on, and we're...
Yeah, man, it hurt me deeply. We were set up a little bit different at the time, but I had worked... done tour visuals on the side for a number of years, but I'd started working at Australia's biggest entertainment company here as an online marketing consultant, and so I'd been doing that full time for a while, and I finally decided, I'm going to go back to full time tour visuals. And then the month after I finished up was when everyone went into lockdown. So I was like, I went to do freelance, and then there was no tour visuals really. We just had to change it up into a few other things. I found I really loved kind of helping other video creators, do what they love, and that I have a wealth of experience that I guess I didn't really recognize that I have. Also because I'm kind of isolated where I live in Western Australia. So now I'm doing more of those products. I'm taking a pause at the moment from the products to really build up more of an audience. I'm doing more on YouTube mostly there, because the way that I've done it is that I've managed to partner with some of my friends that had larger audiences, larger YouTube channels, for example. Some of the guys that I've worked with in the past have a large audience. And so that's a way that you can kind of say, hey, I'll do all the work and you have the audience and maybe we can split this 50-50. And that's worked out quite well a few times, sometimes not as well as hit and miss. But if you don't, that's the thing, if you don't have an audience already inbuilt, then, there's not a whole lot of people to sell to. But if you could, I've got some projects where I'm like, man, I should just take two or three of us that do what I do and make one site, and then, we'd have a bigger audience. So there's definitely, and it's easy now to build a Shopify and to sell whatever you have. And I've started now changing all of my contracts, the small print of my invoices and stuff to make sure that I can actually use some of the assets that I'm creating in the future, and trying to be very clear about the delineation between this specific show and the elements that built the show so that I could sell the elements. So that's something I've started doing recently.
Yeah, that's really smart. Where can people find some of these, if they want to check out your work or some of these projects and resources as well online?
I mean, the easiest way to find everything that I do is probably Instagram, because I do use it as a bit of a hub. Because to be honest, I have products with about 4 or 5 different carriers. So you'll kind of see me around the internet if you're into motion design. So if you go to my Instagram or my website, is grantmfletcher.com. M for Malcolm. I just started using it when I was younger. I thought, I don't know. I thought maybe it made me sound more sophisticated or something. But, since then I've kind of every year gone, should I just go to Grant Fletcher? But everything online is Grant M Fletcher. And yeah, I've got, you know, tour visuals that you can literally just plug and play, like loops, if you were VJing or if you were going on tour or whatever, you can just grab them on a site called seeingsoundsvisuals.com, which is the thing that I built myself. And then, yeah, honestly, I need to gather everything because it's all scattered, but I was just trying a bunch of stuff out, and yeah, it's been great fun.
Anybody who's watching on YouTube, we'll make sure we link to all those things in the description as well. Thanks again, Grant, for hanging out with us on the podcast. We're so glad to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, man. Love you guys.
Top man. Okay, for everything else, you'll find us, learnlivemusic.com.